While the Prince of Darkness may be gone, MotoGP's crazy train certainly lives on. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. We miss you, Ozzy. Welcome to episode 603 of Motorsport 101. Glad you could join us, and I will never be so nice about the city of Birmingham ever again on this podcast. I promise you that, as a Londoner from the filthy south. Glad you could join us. Glad you could join us as ever. You know, God, I'm still getting over episode 600. Sorry that it took so long to get 601 and 602 up last week. It was a very, very congested week, and turns out it takes some time editing a 3.25 hour long podcast. Who knew? And things get a little bit backed up on the wagon sometimes, but glad you can join us anyway. We got two episodes this week as ever. MotoGP, and finally we are back at Brno for the Czechia Grand Prix. Very, very glad to be back at Brno. And did it produce a good race? We're happy it's back. And we also got IndyCar in Toronto to talk about a little bit later. Was that a good race? If you like chaos, maybe.
If you don't like Alex Palou, you were thrilled.
I'm happy that Canada is still an independent sovereign nation.
The bar has never been set lower. I am glad that Canada is still...
We have threatened to go beneath the bar this year. There is a reason why the Four Nations face-off was such a big success, and it wasn't just because we had the best international ice hockey players playing one another in an all-star game type set scenario.
That's RJ O'Connell going massively off script right now. As ever, glad you could join us. And joining us as well is Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. I am coming to you from the land of not having much hearing, because all that was played throughout at work and at home and in the car yesterday was Sabbath.
To be fair, it actually made a nice refreshing change from Coldplay.
Well, wasn't a stranger to affairs in his lifetime.
I mean, I kind of have to talk about that a little bit because it was just so goddamn funny.
If this was when your wife catches you on the Ring app with five boxes of sneakers.
Five boxes, Cam. You've been shopping lately, haven't you?
Well, I do have my Aqua. It's coming in tomorrow. Where I'll put them, I don't know. I have too many sneakers. I only deal in expensive hobbies. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's a bad idea, but for me, it's been Pokemon cards and sneakers. They are two very expensive hobbies, let me tell you, says man with 300-pound pair of Kobes in the same camera shot as my head. It's not ideal.
But, you paid 300 for them?
Shut up. You knew Shame. They weren't available in the UK. You knew that. And you know we get boned on currency. Shut up and leave me alone, all right? You prick. I don't need this shit right now, all right? I'm just trying to buy my next pair of sneakers.
Bring it back. Bring it back on the script. Just remember, our bikes.
Our bikes.
Well,
it rolls on.
To be fair, in this case, it was more like his bikes, because Alex Marquez had the weekend from hell. Mark Marquez didn't have the weekend from hell. And just like that, we're now looking at a 120-point championship lead as MotoGP enters its summer break. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We didn't get to the finish without some tire pressure controversy. Yes, we're talking about this again. How fun. And there's a whole bunch of little things to talk about as well. We've got Aprilia having one of their best days of the season so far, really. Good to see them back. We've got another domino falling in the silly season scandal, I should say. And it's not Jorge Martin. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And big political warfare later on as well, because it's been strangely underreported from places outside of my own day job. But it's a potential huge story with big potential ramifications for the future of the sport in terms of politics and, shall we say, collective bargaining. More on that later on as well. And I've got an exclusive sneak peek at the 2026 MotoGP calendar. It's technically under embargo, but by the time this goes live, so will the calendar, so it's fine. Cool. All good. Right, so places you can find us in the meantime, real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to find our personal handles on Blue Sky, you can at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and cbuckley917.bsky.social. We're on Instagram at motorsport101pod. We're on TikTok at m101_podcast. On our website, motorsport101.com, if you want full written reviews of this race, IndyCar in Toronto, which was the most in-depth strategical piece I've ever written on that website. I had to watch that race twice to make sense of it all. No, seriously, I did. It was a painful experience. And a huge, whopping 5,000-word mid-season review for Formula One. All 10 teams featured, driver stats, you name it. It's all crazy shit. All there on the website. Give it a read if you've got 25 minutes and a cup of coffee. And of course, basically, you can find us as well, one more time, on Patreon as well, patreon.com/motorsport101. If you want to get some early access in your life, which you got all the Ferrari segment from that pre-season, or just a mid-season review, for free. If you were a Patreon backer at any level, if you upgrade to the $5 tier, you get early access to everything on the show guaranteed. And if you can upgrade to the $10 tier as well to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor, Kira, and Jason are doing so right now. Thank you very much for listening, folks. And also, we got one more Patreon backer that joined us this week. Let me just quickly check my email list and I'll give you the name, because I always shout out new Patreon backers. Stephen Osborne, thank you very much for backing us on Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. One day we'll have just like a slew of gag names signed up to the Patreon.
Indeed.
The brain rot's going to be incredible. But I think it's time to talk about MotoGP and Brno.
I think that's a very good idea right after this.
You know, they could have knocked this place down. They were dead set on knocking this place down, and yet we're back. Racing for the first time on bikes in 5 years, new ownership, track resurfacing, and a global pandemic later, MotoGP is finally back in Czechia, formerly the Czech Republic, formerly Czechoslovakia, and Brno. Stop us if you heard this one before, but Marc Marquez is pretty good. He took a double victory, sprint and the Grand Prix, his fifth in a row, becoming the first Ducati rider to win 5 consecutive Grand Prix at the top level of Grand Prix motorcycle racing. It's his 8th double victory of 2025 so far, his 11th sprint win out of 12 weekends. He has a 120-point lead going into the summer break, but how we got there was not straightforward, because we had both factory Ducatis, not just Mark, but Pecco Bagnaia as well, potentially drop back in the sprint over tire pressure warnings. Marquez got back in front of Pedro Acosta with a lap and a half to go and won that, but Bagnaia dropped 6. Then in Grand Prix time, when Marquez win by only 1.6 seconds after a spirited effort from Marco Bezzecchi in third, Bezzecchi in second, Pedro Acosta got his first podium of the season in third. Alex Marquez had a poor sprint and a crash in the Grand Prix, falling 120 points behind. It's Big Brother, Betray, I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about these tire pressure nonsense from the sprint.
I love that you couldn't even finish the sentence with a straight face before posing me the question. I think that just about sums it up, doesn't it?
I know you were chomping at the bit for this.
I was so pissed off about this. Like, it's... We talked about this at Thailand, because this was the last major time that it happened, the season opener back in March, and it happened again. And this one was a bit more complicated, because I think it needs a bit of more extra context to explain here as well, because not only was there tire pressure warnings on Marc Marquez's dashboard, Francesco Bagnaia had a faulty dashboard warning on his bike, because he was actually within the regulations the entire time, but because there was a glitch on his dashboard, it told him he was at risk of breaking the rules. So he again intentionally dropped back, and he did it on the wrong part of the track. He accidentally ended up giving up three or four places, and he never really recovered from that, man. It was a strange glitch. Marquez was able to get back in the zone and, like I said, pass Acosta with a lap and a half to go, and then just pulled away from by nearly a second on the final lap to take victory in the end. It was about as calm and as calculated as a sprint race where the rider that won was immediately under investigation as you could get. And, you know, I mean, you could tell when they got the podium out that Mark was grinning like a Cheshire cat, like going to Luigi Deligna going, like, Deligna was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, we followed the dash. We're good. And then 5 minutes later, we found out that he was cleared. No investigation required. Why? Because Dorner had put in the wrong figures to calculate what a legal tire pressure limit would be around this place. So there were three riders that were under investigation. It was Marquez, Aguirre, and Alex Rins. All of them were absolutely fine the whole way through. It was just that Dorner had put in the wrong figures. Whoops.
This organizing body is so incredibly well-equipped to deal with an aerodynamic-driven sport.
We don't know what we're doing.
Well, I mean, we do have a solution. Unfortunately, it's sitting in a warehouse forever because we're never getting those new tires, and this is just going to keep getting a little worse and a little worse until we get our new bikes with our new Pirelli tires in 2027, isn't it? It's every time it rears its ugly head, you get the stupefying spectacle of the lead rider deliberately giving up the race lead so they can abuse their front tire in someone else's dirty air to make it legal. This is so stupid.
Yeah, it's the one thing in motorsport that sounds stupider than NASCAR's playoff system. Like,
We have climbed over the fence. We have dreamed the impossible dream. Get fucked, NASCAR.
Look, man, dropping for the lead as a tactical advantage, we kind of dropped Formula E for part of that reason. Mm. By the way, congratulations, Oliver Rowland, for putting belt to ass all season, wrapping up for the championship. It's even finished at London.
Yeah, got to interview him today, actually, for the Autosport Racing podcast. Absolutely lovely gentleman. Very Yorkshire, yeah. I must say. Because remember, if it ain't Yorkshire, it ain't worth Ruddy visiting. Congrats to all of the best driver in FE.
We're going to revisit that sketch so many times. But yeah, we drop Formula E for stuff like this, but we can't let MotoGP go because we just love it too much.
It's still immensely frustrating.
I mean, we did, we being this network, did drop World Superbike due to the continued punishing dominance of one Ducati rider. And it feels like we're starting to trend in that same direction.
Not gonna lie, it is very much feeling that way. I mean, even when you throw in a 11-lap, 10-lap sprint race with Marc Marquez, with the warning light on his dash, it never looked like he was going to lose that sprint. He was just so good. And look, first of all, and I'll get the positives out of the way, generally speaking, it's wonderful that Bruno is back on the calendar. It's a fantastic bike track. Props to the new owners. The resurfacing was universally approved by the riders and the sport in general. Glowing words from the riders in terms of they did this properly. It smoothed out all the old bumps on the track. It was buttery smooth. If anything, it might have been too good to resurface.
It's almost wiped some of the character away.
Yeah, because it's now so smooth and so much grip, it's actually now inducing rear-end chatter because it's got so much grip.
We were seeing the telltale marks, actually, much like Sachsenring, where the rear tire was bouncing up and down off the pavement, chattering. You can actually see that in the tire marks into the turn, especially off the Ducatis, because they just have so much rear grip. They have too much rear grip. But yeah, I mean, this place used to be a gauntlet. It used to be a genuinely tricky surface in combination with its layout, a real rider's track. And this has kind of has almost sterilized it a little too much. Not too much, not horribly. But it has taken some of the, let's say, mines off of the track, where if you go offline, you're probably going to tuck the front.
Look, yeah, a sterilized version of Brno is still a cool place to race, especially for bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Don't disagree with that. And multiple places you can pass people, opportunities were there. They presented themselves. It was a, that makes it a little bit more unpredictable, even if the race itself ultimately ended up being so. I mean, again, I'm kind of blending one point into the next here, but Marc Márquez is just
suffocating the sport.
The thing about it is that looking back on the sprint and the race itself, I'm not fully convinced Ducati had the best bike here this weekend. I think Marc Márquez alone was the difference maker here, because if you look at the rest of the Ducatis in the field, and this, in, let's just take the Grand Prix for example for a minute, Marc Márquez won the race. Francesco Bagnaia did get stronger as the race went on, but ultimately had to settle for fourth. He couldn't quite get past Acosta at the end of the race. He was gunning him down at the end, but putting the pressure on, but couldn't get close enough for a pass. Alex Márquez tucked the front and crashed. Fabio Di Giantonio and Fermín Aldeguer was nowhere. Turns out Aldeguer and Miguel Oliveira had a collision that wasn't even seen on camera, which has led to apparently those two beefing over an incident that we just don't know what happened, which is also quite interesting. And Morbidelli obviously missed this weekend due to shoulder pain. So you look at the Ducatis, they actually weren't that strong this weekend. And look, Bez was a little bit behind in the end, but if you look at a 1.6 second margin of victory over a 21 lap race, that's less than a tenth. Like, that is a very, very strong ride from Bez. It's the, arguably, Bez has been the second best rider in MotoGP for the last three weekends, and all of a sudden is now fourth in the championship. He's looking like his 2023 self again, and that's a very good sign for the Aprilia camp. And also an intriguing one as to why Ducati just weren't that strong this weekend, Cam.
I almost wonder if they've got too much grip, which is, it's weird to say it in motorsport terms, but almost to the point where they almost have difficulty using it with that resurfaced track. Because we see, like, sometimes this Ducati, this iteration of it, will just go off the boil a little. And it's not going to be horrible, because that is the extraordinary thing about the modern Decimo Sedici, is that a bad weekend for them is winning by not much.
Yeah.
As opposed to a bad weekend for everyone else being scrapping for points. That floor that this bike has is the ace in its hole. But yeah, I mean, on one hand, yes. On the other hand, it feels like Mark was so ridiculously dominant at times this weekend that he had to pump in a fastest lap near the end just to make sure he didn't dump the bike from lack of concentration. He was riding that bike with one arm at one point. He's got so much raw speed in hand on that bike.
Mick Doohan was evoked at least a couple times over the course of the weekend in terms of, like, what stage Marc Márquez is at in his career.
Remember, Mick Doohan won all five of his titles after he obliterated his leg.
Yeah.
And it only took another career-ending incident for him to hang it up. And he would still test with the Honda, and Valentino Rossi, in his prime, would go, "Fuck, Mick is fast." Exact quote.
Like, David Emmett, who we swear is the best in the business, talked about it in his newsletter, and he described it as Agostini-like from Márquez, who's now overtaken on the all-time Premier Class wins. This was Premier Class win
number 70
for Marc Márquez. He's won 70 top flight races in 201 starts.
Dre, he wasn't here in 2020, or most of 21, or part of 22, and the Honda didn't let him be here in 23.
He's come back, first time he's ridden here in years. And, well, like you said, like the line you said earlier, Cam, is the one that got me. He pumped in back to back lap record laps just to feel something, just because he didn't want to lose concentration and potentially tuck the front like he did at COTA. That's how nonchalant, but also how dialed in Mark Marquez is when it comes to trying to win this championship. He's literally completing side quests while trying to win these races. It's
standing Kamehameha.
Oh, yeah. It's just
unfazed.
Is that for me?
Is that strategy to win a race is an average Dracula flow boast.
It is suffocating. It is. We've gone from. This was a title fight, probably longer than some of us thought it was going to be, with Alex just being phenomenally consistent. He's frankly had the July from hell, if we're being honest.
Yes, it's in a whole.
We'll expand on him in a little bit, but it's gone from that to it's probably over to it's definitely over to how early is Mark going to wrap this up? Because he now has the biggest title gap to someone since McDowin in 1997.
I think Rossi in his prime won one of his titles by exactly 120 points. Don't quote me on that, but it was. I think David did the maths, and I did the same when I was bored on Sunday night when I was writing my race review. If he keeps up at this pace, and assuming this is worst case scenario, Alex Marquez follows him home every weekend. He wins the world title in Misano in September in Valentino Rossi's backyard.
McDowin won the 1997 motorcycle 500cc championship. This was not MotoGP yet, with 340 points.
Yeah.
Okada was second with 197.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah. Yeah, bloodbath. And the only reason it was that small is because he crashed out of his home race to finish the season. It's absurd. It's the logical endpoint of what happens if you take the best racing motorcycle that we've probably seen in our lifetimes and plug the best motorcycle rider we've probably ever seen on our lifetimes onto it.
This is a broken football manager save when you've already won three league titles in a row. You have the best squads. You have the regens that have 190 potential on your save. And yeah, like, at this point, you're coasting. It doesn't matter what you do because you're going to win. RJ has pointed out that the modern-day target in the Premier Class era is 2002 when Valentino Rossi beat Max Biaggi by 140.
Pretty good.
I need to point out, and this is something that needs to be said, Max Biaggi was a fantastic bike racer. He really was.
Before Danny Pedrosa came along, he was the best rider that never won a Premier Class title.
Won four 250 titles when it meant more back then, and won a World Superbike title right at the end of his career on top of it. Max Biaggi was a damn good bike rider, and Valentino Rossi made him look stupid.
Can I just be quite clear? If you took Mark Marquez's race-only tally in points, he would be 19 points off of his brother for the championship lead.
It's ridiculous.
He has dropped 3 points. 3 points from the sprint this year.
Dude, that's like a statistic you'd see on like an old school chart party episode from John Boys and Secret Base back in the day.
It's the Bob Gibson reveal in that season of the year of the picture when he find out his ERA was 1.12 and you just laugh because it's like, how is that fathomable that he's done something like this? The terrifying thing is he's left two wins on the table easily. He should have won COTA. He should have won a COTA. He probably should have won an RF. The only race where I don't think he looks. Yeah.
He is tracking after 13 rounds, 98 points ahead of Pecco Bagnaia's championship winning season in 2023.
Yeah, I saw one of my old mates, Lewis Duncan, at Crash.net point this out, where it was like, he's averaging 31 out of 37 points per weekend right now. It's seven more than Jorge Martin won the world title with last year.
Here's
seven
the graph.
Per weekend. It's obscene. It is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's beyond adjectives, because, like, again, we're getting to the point. We might have to embargo MotoGP. We might have to get it out of here. It's not covering it because it's there's no point in covering it week to week.
No, because
it's ridiculous.
Because I know that, like, we get accused from all of our haters that we're just a glorified Mark Marquez glazing platform to masquerading as a motorcycle podcast.
What else is there to do?
How can you ignore? We are witnessing greatness. We are witnessing quite possibly the greatest MotoGP season anyone has ever put together in front of our very eyes. And thankfully, Kira in the chat quite rightly points out, hey, you are nothing like TNT on Jake Dixon here. which, if I ever was like the glaze that Neil Hodgson drops on his client, please shoot me now. Did I say client there? I meant rider. Yeah, totally. the hands are totally not in the cookie jar like Michael Laverty is. Anyway, I'll give them this. As much as it's very hard to ignore Mark Marquez's ridiculous run of form, we've got to give Aprilia some credit because...
Oh, hell yeah.
They've looked a lot stronger in the last month or so. Marco Bezzecchi, as mentioned, is in fantastic form right now. You know, 2 second places in his last three races, really should have gone three straight in Germany, given how the turn one of poor judgment fared. But like, this was a banner day, I think, for Aprilia in terms of you look across the field. Marco Bezzecchi, second on the road, less than 2 seconds off Mark Marquez. That's a really good result given the form Marquez is in right now. Was comfortably second for most of that race, led several laps of the time being as well. Raul Fernandez was top independent. He was P5, Max's career high finish over at Trackhouse.
First,
we've been waiting for this.
First Raul Fernandez signing in a hot minute.
Yeah, like all of a sudden, Raul Fernandez has been in the top 10 for 6 of the last 7 races. Like, this is a much improved Raul Fernandez. He's finally, I think, starting to get this shit down now. Seeing, this is year 4 for Raul Fernandez, and I'm just glad he's starting to finally figure this out. And this was Jorge Martin's first weekend back in MotoGP, and after obviously the series of horrible injuries he suffered, and while the sprint wasn't so strong, 7th in the Grand Prix and competitive immediately. Forgive me for one moment here, because there was a great stat, and I've got to give credit where it's due to TNT on this one, because it was Gavin Emmett on commentary that pointed this out and did the numbers. And this is ignoring the preseason tests that Martin missed through injury, obviously because he hurt himself early on in Sepang. If you're looking at just race weekends, Gavin reckoned Martin is about 5,000 kilometers less in terms of running compared to everybody else in the field, assuming you've done roughly the full race schedule across the season so far, which when you think about it, and the lack of running by comparison, the fact that Jorge Martin is essentially, this is only the second Grand Prix weekend he's taken part in all year, and he was 7th and competitive immediately, that's a very promising sign for him and for Aprilia in general. I think all of them needed a weekend like this, and I'm glad they got it.
Dude, yeah, we're missing now is for just Ayagura to just, like, come on, heat up like you were at the start of the season. Get it going again.
He's cooled off a bit. Again, I think the thing that's letting Aprilia down is that floor. It is when they are good, they can shadow the Ducatis. They can at least make them look over their shoulders. But when Aprilia are out to lunch, which is happening less and less, thankfully for them, and we can, that is now quantified in the fact that they are out of Tier D. Like, they are.
Well,
right?
They were never in Tier D. They were trying to avoid falling into Tier D. Now, for those who don't know, the cutoff was this weekend in Brno. The rules are you have to have scored more than 35% of the maximum point total over the testing period of the last full, basically it's roughly a calendar year. It's the back half of last year and the first half of this year. They needed 17 points across the weekend from whatever combination of riders they were running to get that. And because of Bezzecchi's second place score in 20, that was enough to avoid dropping into tier D. Now, some would argue maybe you'd want to drop into tier D for the sake of development. We're dealing with Italians. They have far too much pride for that shit.
Yeah. Ask Vegeta if he wants another Zenkai boost. No, he wants to beat the other guy.
Exactly. Aprilia did not want to drop into that tier. They have too much pride for that. They looked at it as an insult if they had to be essentially the equivalent of an open class runner in modern day MotoGP terms. But they avoided that. They avoided that by Bez pulling one out of his arse again in Bruno in Grand Prix trim. And look, I don't know if you saw the clip, but did you see the reaction from the Aprilia garage when Martin stopped in the box after that seventh place? He got a hero's welcome.
You never know, these two sides were like beefing with each other for months.
I don't think Martin ever had a problem with the people in the garage. I think it's the Alex Palou situation. The people that are on the ground floor didn't have a problem with Jorge Martin. It was the management, that Martin was ultimately beefing with. The people that were there clearly still have a lot of respect for this man, and you could see how much it meant to him, how much it meant to Aprilia. And let's not forget, despite all the political beef and the wranglings that came with it, Aprilia were always the first people to say, come back with open arms. They never wanted to lose Martin. At no point were they pushing him towards the exit door. Massimo Rivera himself, the CEO of Aprilia, openly said, our first priority is keeping him here, and we will do whatever it takes to make him happy. That does not sound like a team that wants to push their world champion out of the door.
No.
So, it's almost frustrating that the whole thing just seemed unnecessary. It really did. And, we'll never know if Martin really did have something in that contract that said, I can get out of this, whether there was an injury clause. We'll probably never know now. But you would never think there was one, given that reaction. It was a very deep, emotional, visceral feeling. And I don't care what anyone says, the sport is more interesting when the world champion, who is on a different bike, a different manufacturer, is challenging Ducati. It's far more interesting that way. And that's no disrespect to Bagnaia, to Alex Marquez, to anybody else on a 24 or 25 that's challenging. Manufacturer strength is what makes motorsport more interesting. Turn up to the ACO. Sports car joke. See, I'm one of you guys now.
ain't no BOP that could make Honda a consistent contender here. Especially when every goddamn weekend, Yoen Mir is the pinata. It's not even his fault anymore, man.
Third Grand Prix in a row, he's been taken out via somebody else's riding. It was Fermín Aldeguer at Assen. It was Ayaguro in the Saxon Ring. And this time it was Alex Marquez who just tucked the front and collected Mir on the outside. And Mir was pissed. I've seen the TikTok of them behind the scenes, behind the fence. Mir looked like he wanted to strangle that man. And I can't blame him because, Alex just lost it. He lost it on his own. He went in too hot, trying to dive it down the inside of Mir, and lost the front. And Mir was a passenger again. That poor man. Honestly, you look at his Wikipedia page, and it's just a string of purple. It's so tragic.
There's no gold here anymore.
Remember when that string was just like silver, bronze, green, 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 silver, and that one gold? That wasn't too long ago.
That was less than 5 years ago, and now he's at a season where he's been DNF'd in 8 out of the 12 races so far this season.
Dude, it's not great. It's not great at all.
It's not great. And he was stuck there too because his flight got cancelled. Just a bad weekend, man. Just a bad weekend.
A universal pinata treatment.
Yeah, more struggles than Jake Dennis on Instagram. Now, this is an interesting one, and again, full credit to my colleague at the Motorsport Network, Yuri Pudjemon, who was the guy who broke this story and did a fantastic job breaking this down. And yeah, like, we ran this as an exclusive. We were very lucky to get this because this is potentially huge. I think it's gone quite under the radar so far, but I think it could be a very big deal in the near future. The sports manufacturers have come together and lobbied up a challenge to Dorna, who still own the commercial rights to MotoGP. Yes, Liberty Media now owns 5-6 of them, roughly 84%, but Dorna still holds the commercial rights to MotoGP. They want to develop a Formula One-esque Concorde agreement for 2026, because the sport's current collective bargaining deal expires at the end of next year. And, well, the manufacturers are basically using two key aspects of this. The two things they are aiming for are they want a bigger slice of the overall revenue that the sport is making, which, again, pretty common in collective bargaining agreements. You know, where's the split of the revenue going? And the other one is they want to own their own grid slots. So for those who don't know, the grid slots in MotoGP are something that Dorna owns. They are given to the teams at Dorna's discretion. They can be revoked at any time. We saw that with the artists formerly known as the Funny Money guys at RNF when they were bought out by Razlin from Razlin Razali from Crypto Data. They were revoked because they weren't paying the bills, essentially. The teams want to own their own slice of that, essentially. And from what I've been told, Dorna are pissed.
Okay. Where's Dorna's? Why does Dorna have their hair in a dander about this?
Well, isn't it obvious? It means they'd have to pay him more money. Cameo on mute.
Oops. would the turkeys vote for Thanksgiving?
No.
I don't know. Exactly. Would these turkeys vote for anybody that was in the Epstein files?
Jesus Christ.
What's that? I don't know. Everyone's saying they don't exist anymore. The answer is obvious that Dorna would not want to give up the control over the sporting aspect of the championship. They own the grid slots. They own the TV rights. They own everything except the technical side of things, where the manufacturers own everything and have painted us into the corner that we have with the current technical regulations.
And let's not forget, Dorna aren't exactly handing out huge checks to these manufacturers or even teams in the first place. The only thing the independent teams are getting is that 2.5 or so roughly million discrepancy fund that goes towards independent teams when they're not directly ran by a manufacturer. That's about it. And from what I've been told, Dorna's not giving the manufacturers or the teams in general a very big percentage of the revenue that the league is making or the sport in general is making. And that, if you look at any other, like you look at the American sports, which are all based around collective bargaining agreements, the revenue is somewhere between 51 and 55% in the athlete's favor most of the time, and obviously that gets negotiated whenever new TV deals or new bargaining agreements come around. Both sides will sit down and thrash out a number. But from what I've been told, Dorna are not giving away anywhere near that kind of percent to the teams and manufacturers in MotoGP right now, and that is what the manufacturers are gunning for. They want a bigger slice of the pie. I think, you know what it is as well? I think they're looking at Formula One. They are clearly
Formula One. They're owned by Liberty Media.
Especially now that they're now owned essentially by Formula One. Formula One gives half the money to the teams. You know, and that percentage is divvied up in a whole bunch of different ways. But ultimately, it's split 50-50 between the commercial rights of Formula One management and the teams. And the manufacturers are not getting that. And I'm sure they've now seen the news that Formula One has bought them out and is now sitting there going, well, why can't we be like that?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame them for feeling that way. I really don't. Mm-hmm. The problem is that why would Dorna give away a bigger slice of their pie when they've been so reluctant to do so in years past?
Well, they are super reluctant because they've been burned on it before with entities like Kawasaki, like Suzuki leaving a couple of years ago. We know how Dorna views the manufacturers, and we know that they've built in a series of fail-safes because they don't trust the manufacturers.
Yeah, Kawasaki quitting in 2008 out of nowhere after the credit crunch hit. Suzuki quitted in 2022, allegedly due to emissions costs. We'll never know the true story behind that, but we're pretty confident it was that. Dorna doesn't want to get his fingers burned again, which, again, is understandable. But I also do wonder, what is it going to take for Dorna to give up that slice of the pie? I wonder, and I know other people have speculated about this, would Dorna go to the manufacturers and say, we're getting rid of your technical veto, take some of the power out of the manufacturer's hands? Because I personally think the manufacturers will not win on this dispute because they haven't got enough leverage. I know they've brought in Lin Jarvis.
Right. The house always wins. Like, the organizing body at the end of the day holds the cards.
Yeah,
that's usually the case. It's like, what would the manufacturers do if they didn't get their way? They'd probably just keep doing what they're doing now.
This would be a much stronger push as an entity if it was the teams that were making this appeal and not the manufacturers. You need teams to compete at the end of the day. You need teams to fill out your grid. That's when you've got leverage. If the manufacturers all bailed, they still have to sell them to customers that wanted them. They've still got agreements in place with said manufacturers. And most of these teams that are customer teams are manufacturer aligned, as Raptor points out in the chat. If the teams were the ones that were appealing this, I'd say that it would have a stronger case. But the manufacturers doing so, Dorna will just say, well, what are you going to do, quit?
Pretty much. I mean, that's what sets this apart, really, from what we see in F1, because it's not the manufacturers in F1 being the power unit suppliers, some of whom have factory teams. It is the teams themselves who hold that power in F1, and that's what gives them the leverage that they have to negotiate with F1 and with the FIA beyond. I don't see this going anywhere myself. Not unless there is someone's going to have to give up something that they're not going to want to give up.
I mean, I think that they might have a more successful case because these are, you know, brands and manufacturers and not high-level female athletes asking for a living wage in the sport that they play.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
So many experts on women's sports who just want to protect the game. Now, all of a sudden, they don't care about it anymore. That's neither here nor there, though.
Yeah, the same people that claim to watch WNBA who don't says the league's losing money. Why are you asking to be paid more?
The league has existed for a shorter amount of time than Major League Soccer, but just never turned a profit.
I can come out with a very simple theory. Netflix doesn't make money. You don't see people taking to Instagram and saying, why aren't their staff being paid more? It's the same principle. And on a tangent note, you look at outside news, companies and tech bros are lining up around the block to invest in the WNBA right now. The women's players have got every right to sit down and ask for more because I find it insulting that one of the most recognizable women in sports is getting paid $77,000 for this season and is probably making less on Raw salary than the journalists that are being paid to cover her properly.
Yep.
Anywho, couple of little things to get out of the way before we get out of here. First up, we have another domino falling in silly season. We got the word on Monday. Luca Marini has signed a one-year extension with Repsol Honda. Well, Repsol Honda, such as a Honda. What? It's a factory what? Team.
What's a Repsol Honda? Showing your age, Harris.
This to mean something to me, man. But yeah, Luca Marini, back on a one-year deal, and more importantly, in sync with everybody else's contracts, it seems.
I think it's a good, makes sense move for all parties involved. Marini gets to test the open market properly next year, depending on how things shake out. Honda keeps what's been their most consistent rider throughout most of the year. And obviously not the high sides of Johann Zarco, obviously. But out of their two factory riders, Marini has been bringing it home every weekend he's taken part in. He has brought home solid results. He's built up a relationship with the brand. He's gone out of his way to help them out in Suzuka as well, which unfortunately got him in a bit of a pickle through no real fault of his own. But he did the right thing, quote unquote, to help Honda out. And Honda's rewarded him with an extra contract, which I think is great for all parties involved. And Marini should be on the grid, quite frankly. He's a very good rider. He has been for a long time. And yeah, I'm glad Honda has recognized that and given him a new deal. I think that's a good move for all parties. And
Gonna
be interesting. I mean, but do not get it twisted, though. They are still absolutely in for Jorge Martin for 2027. Do not make any mistake on that. If anything, all of their riders will be under contract review next year. They've got room. They're lining their ducks up in a row. Just trust me on that.
It would be a fun 2027 silly season. First, Trey, we got to get to 2026. For the first time, for those listening live, our patrons on Motorsport 101, but by the time you hear this in the public, it'll be out there.
Yeah, I've got next year's calendar in front of me, which is pretty neat. Like I said, at the time we're recording this, is still under embargo, but by the time this actually goes out to the public, it'll already be public information, so no matter. Right, so let's have a rundown of the 2026 MotoGP calendar. Thailand is back in the opening spot on March 1st. It's kept its opening spot, and also same weekend as well, March 1st. That's neat. Brazil makes its debut as round two on March 22nd. The much-anticipated MotoGP return to Brazil will be in March. It's the first half of a back-to-back with COTA. Austin will be March 29th. Then we take a couple of weeks out, again, because of the month of Ramadan. Qatar will now be round four on April 12th. That will now be followed up in round five of the Spanish Grand Prix at Jerez on April 26th. Then we get to the juicy stuff. We've got Le Mans, the French Grand Prix on May 10th. That's a back-to-back with Catalunya, which is now back in the May slot. There's been some movement on the Spanish races. You'll see what I mean in a minute. Catalunya will now be May 17th. Then we have the Italian Grand Prix at Mugello on May 31st. Then we have another moved around because Balaton Park in Hungary will be on June 6th as the second half of a back-to-back there. So Hungary's already moving. It was going to be in August. It's now going to be moved to June alongside Brno. So Brno is going to be a little earlier next year. That's going to be June 21st. Then we've got the Assentisi, June 28th. Then we take a couple of weeks out. Last round before the break, as tradition, they've gone back to an old tradition now. Germany will be the last round before the break, July 12th. Sport takes a month off. Then we're back again, as tradition, in the UK, back in its original slot, August the 9th, first round after the break. Then for some reason, we take 2 weeks off because Aragon's moving back to August 30th. So Aragon, which is normally in set, which for some reason this year was over in May. It's moving back to basically last weekend in August, first week in September, depending on which way you slice it. So that's on August 30th. Then we've got the second Italian race at Misano, September 13th. New slot for Austria a week after on September the 20th. So again, Spielberg now moving right into the heart of autumn, which is things a bit strange, but here we are. And then we get into the flyaways. You know the drill. Japanese Grand Prix Motegi, which signed a new five-year extension today, keeping it on the calendar until 2030. Good to hear. We love Motegi. October 4th on that one. Then Indonesia on October 11th at Mandalika. And then, again, no triple headers. So this is a small spoiler. There's been no triple headers this year, which is, again, I'm glad they've kept that tradition going now. Phillip Island, October 25th, which is always probably the best round of the year. That's going to be October 25th. That's one half of a back-to-back with Malaysia on November 1st at Sepang. Portimao stays as the penultimate round on the calendar, November 15th, and then the season finale, as usual with MotoGP, at Valencia, November 22nd. So that is your MotoGP 2026 calendar. I've put it in the chat as well for those listening in as well. There it is in all its splendor. What do we make of that, gentlemen?
Okay. Does it seem like moving some of the Spanish rounds, particular Jerez and Aragon, is a big deal?
A little bit. I mean, they've been jumbling these rounds around for a little bit now for some reason. Like, Aragon only had 50,000 this year, so in terms of race day. So I think they're going to try and just move it back to its original slot, hoping that fans will roll out for it. It's a better venue than it was a few years ago. It's not a ghost town anymore. So maybe just putting Aragon back where it normally is would be a better fit for it. Same with the British Grand Prix. The fact that that's back in August rather than the May slot it was put in this year. I don't know what they were thinking with that. Thinking that moving the Grand Prix to May was a good idea. It was not. The attendance proved that. There was probably more people at home watching it than they were in the stadium that day. So that didn't make any sense to me on that one. Brazil, traditionally, it's normally when you're at the old Nelson Piquet track in the early 2000s, it was in the middle of the season. The fact it's going to be round two is, I guess it makes sense because they've done Argentina in that slot before. So keeping it in South America does make sense. Although, as RJ's pointed out, it's probably also worth mentioning that 2027, they confirmed yesterday that MotoGP is going to be staying in Argentina after all. It's going to be racing in Buenos Aires.
Yeah,
that's neat.
Yeah, at the old Autodromo Oscar Galvez, which last hosted motorcycle racing back in 1999.
God, I was barely a fetus when that was happening, even though I was 7 years old. But yes, that's a thing. The F1 track, it's the same F1 circuit as well. Apparently, they are redoing the layout, and they're obviously going to spruce it up because it's not used very much nowadays. But it's just outside Buenos Aires as a city. It makes a lot more sense to run an Argentine Grand Prix there than the TMS Rio del Hondo, which is a fantastic circuit. But it was a nightmare to get to. Only one flight normally was going to that part of Argentina a week normally. So trying to get out there was a nightmare.
Logistically impossible.
Yeah. Just logistically, it just didn't make sense to keep hosting that race there. Just a rough one. We'll have to wait and see. Overall, I'm glad there's no triple headers. That's the most important thing. There's a couple of weird 2 week breaks in there, like the opener, which again is a bit of an IndyCar problem. I don't like the fact that there's 3 weeks after the first round between that and Brazil. It's a bit weird having 3 weeks after Silverstone before Aragon. I think that's a bit strange, but I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad there's no triple headers. And I'm glad that it makes sense. I've not got any major problems with this. I just still wonder. 22 Grand Prix in a season It's a lot. It's a, I mean, we're finishing up now a week before the end of November. That's
all for of them a biking a sprint as well.
Crazy. Yeah. Like, we're going from first week of March to penultimate week in November with sprints. Like, I get it. This is the way MotoGP is going. It's going down. Like, this is a global, it's a global motorsport problem. Everybody's realizing that the easiest way of making more money is by having more races. So naturally, we're at 22. Formula One's at 24. This is the way it's going to be. So, you know, I guess. Yeah. I think that's about it on this one. Just about everything covered. That'll do it for our MotoGP episode. And MotoGP is now in its summer break. So it's now got 3 weeks off. We can take a month out of our bikes before it returns at the end of the month, the middle of August, really, for the Austrian Grand Prix. That's the first round back on this year's calendar. Formerly a Bagnaia stronghold race. Suspect it won't be the case this year, but hey, we'll have to wait and see.
What makes you say
but
that?
But until then, have you seen the rest of this season?
Yes, just I'm enjoying it immensely. One out there.
Yeah. Pekka Bagnaia, 168 points behind Marc Marquez, as you do. We'll be back with another IndyCar episode on the streets of Toronto very, very soon, and obviously we'll be back with more MotoGP in a month's time. But until then. Been Dre Harrison, David Cameron Buckley, and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
So, how early does he wrap this up?
Mandalika. Misano with a push.
Oof.